Blog Talk Radio.
Summer has come and passed. The innocent can never last. Wake me up when September ends. Like my father's come to pass, 7 years has gone so fast. Wake me up when September ends. Here comes the rain again, falling from the stars, drenched in my pain again, becoming who we are.
And welcome to another Wednesday episode of BAMS Radio. If you're wondering why I played that song, it is obviously the middle of silly season. There's no football, and just wake me up when the non-football season ends. Anyway, with us this evening, Kerry Clark. How are you doing this evening, Mr. Clark?
Doing pretty well, Thomas, and yourself?
I can't complain. To let the fans know, I am not 100% sure if Blip or Bird will be joining us. We had some email communication earlier today, and it was a little unclear. Obviously, Bird is still recovering from the surgery of several weeks ago. But, again, keep him in your prayers. From everything I've read, he's doing well, but don't quote me on that. Anyway, let's get right to it. We missed last week, obviously. Everybody was crazy. If you could see our back email chat, the fans would just laugh. But I think the biggest news today centers around football. Now, we'll probably go SEC meetings in a little while, but the transfer of Philip Ealy. Philip Ealy finally decided to transfer from the program to Toledo. This has been rumored to be the transfer has been rumored to be happening for only the past few months, and it just finalized today. Kerry, what do you think about that whole situation?
Frankly, I'm surprised that it took as long as it did for them to make an official announcement. Actually, Philip himself announced it, as you know, Thomas, on Twitter earlier today. Most of us thought he was going to land at South Florida, which was among his finalists, but he chose Toledo instead. Perhaps he looked at the depth charts at both places. I'm not sure exactly what all the thinking was. But, you know, it was kind of given away about 3 or 4 weeks ago on Twitter when one of his friends, Alabama freshman softball player Callie Case, said something along the effect of, said goodbye to Phil today, I'm really going to miss that kid. Well, that led me to believe, by the way she worded it, that he was not coming back. But at that point, Philip had not said anything official. It was merely a rumor. He did confirm it, as you know, today on Twitter, and that he's going to end up at Toledo. That being said, he was never going to start a game at Alabama. I think he realized that. I'm not sure why he didn't realize that when he signed, but he realized it after he'd been there a while. He will always be able to say that he threw a touchdown pass for Alabama. I can recall in one of the games last year him hitting a running back out of the backfield who scored. So that's something that you can tell your grandkids. It's pretty cool. He also got an SEC and national championship ring. A couple of nationals and 2 SEC. So, you know, he left on good terms. He didn't make any remarks to tick anybody off. He was a man about it. He manned up. He was a good sport. He was a good kid, is a good kid. And about all I can say is that he made a good decision. And we at BAMS Radio certainly wish Philip well in his endeavors at Toledo.
Absolutely. And I believe Toledo was the final choice, because their quarterback, whose name currently escapes me, is a senior, and Ealy would basically be the heir apparent, or at least he believes that, which is why he headed to Toledo. And absolutely echoing your sentiments, Ealy was – he really had the deck stacked against him at Alabama, but never heard anything bad about the young man, so absolutely good luck out at Toledo. And at the very worst, you do have a few rings to show off and a couple of excellent stories. Anyway – moving right along, The SEC meetings are going on this week. The SEC spring meetings are going on this week in Destin, Florida. And as per usual, there are multiple different storylines coming out of there. And we'll just bounce around them real quick and get up some discussion. We've discussed the SEC scheduling change a few times on this program, but I just want to bring it up again real quick. One of the things that Nick Saban did bring up during his little conference or during his one of his comments was he's in the minority for the SEC going to a nine-game schedule. I have said that I'm kind of ambivalent about the entire deal. I think it's a foregone conclusion the SEC will go to nine games, catching pressure from the rest of the country because other large conferences are going to nine games. But still, I think it's worth discussing. Kerry, I believe, I don't want to pigeonhole you, I think we kind of came to a meh understanding of this the last time we talked about it. Has your opinion changed at all about the nine-game SEC schedule?
No, I think it's good, and I think it will happen. I think that it's not if, it's when. It does not appear that it will happen before the 2015 season at the earliest. And Steve Spurrier, while he was holding court in Destin, as he's known to do, let the members of the media that he was speaking to know earlier today that the coaches in one of their closed meetings took an informal vote, and it was 13-1 against. You certainly already know that the one was Nick Saban, but those informal votes don't really matter when presidents and athletic directors make such decisions. They're taken into consideration, but it's not the coach's call to make. It does appear, and even learned people such as Jeremy Foley, a longtime Florida athletic director, had gone on the record in Destin as saying that it does appear imminent that it will happen. You're just not sure what year. Like I said a few minutes ago, it won't be any earlier than the 2015 season, and it may not even be that year, but it does appear that it's going to happen. The league was tentatively going to release the 2014 football schedule this week in Destin, but Mike Slive strongly hinted today that that was not going to be the case either. But I thought it was interesting that Spurrier revealed the 13-1 vote against the nine-game schedule in the coaches' closed meeting. But I think it's also important to note, as I said, that those votes don't make the final determination. Those decisions are left in the hands of presidents and ADs.
Absolutely. Another thing that came up, you mentioned presidents and ADs. The College Football Playoff Selection Committee is starting to get itself figured out. And today, Mike Slive basically said that he has told his 14 ADs to give him names, names of people that they think, the ADs think, would be good to sit on the committee. I understand the thinking here, the let's get our peers to put the committee together, but I'm having trouble personally getting past the fact that I think the playoff selection committee is a monstrous mistake to take this as a good idea. Kerry, do me a favor and pull me back on the from the edge on this one, because I've gone on record multiple times saying I think it is a horrendously bad idea to do a selection committee, but I think we're stuck with it at this point.
Well, I don't really know that I can pull you off the edge of a ledge. But I don't know how to I don't know how you would go about selecting the teams for a tournament when you have a selection committee in every other sport in the NCAA, be it baseball, softball, men's basketball, women's basketball, every sport that has a tournament involved. And this is a 14 tournament. Make no mistake about that, Thomas. And
absolutely,
because of the fact that it's a tournament, you really can't let computers and polls determine, because there are too many different computers and polls. Those can be guidelines, but at the end of the day, there's going to have to be a committee to pick the four teams, because that's how it's done. I mean, that's how it's done in basketball. That's how it's done in baseball, softball. I don't know of another way to do it, unless you just decided on one poll and said, okay, if the BCS comes out and these are the top four, they're going to the playoff. I'm not worried too much about the committee as much as I am about who's on it. I was quite disappointed when it was announced that there were not obviously going to be any media members on the committee. I thought the media should have some representation, if not current media members, at least retired people, you know, like a Keith Jackson or somebody like that. But apparently there's not going to be any media involvement on the committee. That bothers me as much as the fact that there being a committee bothers you, I guess.
Well, I understand what you're saying with adding the human element to it. I just feel like you can come up with a formula that you can execute into a computer, and if the formula doesn't work over multiple years, it's a hell of a lot easier and a hell of a lot less annoying to change an X plus 2 to an X plus 3 versus saying, you, sir, are a moron, and you put the Southeastern School of Alaska Raging Snowmen in the 4-team playoff for no good reason. And obviously that's an extreme example, but when you add so many opinions like that, it's just inevitable to me. But that's what people have chosen to do, and they removed the math element, which I don't think math you can really influence unless you have a formulaic problem. And at that point, that's something that you have to fix. The media member thing, I didn't know that. And I see both sides of that, just thinking about it briefly. The concept that media members are just trying to drive a story so they wouldn't be as quote-unquote good, maybe. But at the same time, media members have to study as much or more than your average fan to be able to write a decent story. So I do see both sides of that. Obviously, both of our concerns or both of our questions have been, I guess you could say, sublimated to this committee approach. So I guess I'm still going to – I said it before, I'll say it again. I'm a little off on it, but I'll see how it goes. Maybe I really am just making a mountain out of a molehill, and if that's the case, I'll be the first guy that if someone calls me on it, be like, yep, I was wrong. I accept that. Just briefly, before we keep going, if you want to join in the conversation with Carrie and I, if it's only Carrie and I, we'll only be around for about an hour this evening. But you can join in at 714-510-3707. We have plenty of lines open, and we would love to hear from you. We are going to be bouncing around a little bit because we've had 2 weeks of content to go through. So if we say something and you want to challenge a point, give us a ring. We would absolutely love to hear from you. Let's see. Anything else that's come out of the SEC spring meetings that I've missed, Kerry? I've been kind of under a rock in terms of actual time to read the news. I'm busy applying to graduate school.
Oh, well, good luck on that. As someone who's been through that process back when it was a lot easier to get in. But, there's been a few other things. I wouldn't say that any of them are as earth-shattering as those we've already spoken about. A couple of reporters got a hold of Anthony Grant, and he's continuing to add tough teams to his schedule. It appears that he's going to add Texas Tech in a home and home. It was earlier announced that he was adding Oklahoma, and you know he's already in a tournament. He's added UCLA in the last couple of weeks. He's already in a tournament that could put him against Duke in Madison Square Garden. It appears that Alabama's basketball team is going to have one of the nation's toughest schedules this coming 2 years, really, because a lot of these are home and home deals. But and so that was a brief topic down there. Let's see. I guess Bill Battle had an interesting quote. He said that in the 8 weeks he's been athletic director of Alabama, he has sat in more meetings than he did in 20 years as the president of a business. Thought that was pretty interesting. That's probably about it. I mean, you know, every now and then, you know, there's been a couple of pot shots at the Big Ten by various SEC coaches. That's to be expected. One of the reasons that the media travels to Destin as well as to Hoover, which SEC Media Days are coming up. This is kind of a prequel to SEC Media Days, Thomas, because there are a good number of media in Destin for this event, just not the hordes that will descend on Hoover in July. But that's coming up sooner than later. But, you know, that's probably about it. we got a lot of other University of Alabama athletics-related issues to talk about. I'm not sure if we need to take a break right now or not, but we certainly need to go over at some point the progress reports for the softball team and the baseball team, the women's golf team, whose season is over, and the men's golf team, who are endeavoring to win their first national championship in Atlanta. A whole lot of stuff going on in Alabama athletics, which we can touch on later if we need to take a break.
Absolutely. I was planning on taking a break real quick, and then we can go into that. I just wanted to spend the first segment kind of getting fans up with the most current news, particularly on the football front. Let's take a quick break, and we will be right back. We'll be discussing some softball, some baseball, and other, I guess you could say, spring sports at the Capstone. Be right back. This is BAMS Radio.
Get ready for a touchdown of savings that will make you want to do your own end zone dance. With Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Atlantic Bedding and Furniture.
Unlike the chain furniture stores, Atlantic Bedding and Furniture gives the Bama fan a choice in fine furniture at super low prices. We have over 30,000 items always in stock. Atlantic Bedding and Furniture will have exactly what you need for your rec room, man cave, or however you wish to celebrate that latest Bama victory. Our selection includes Simmons, Serta, Broyhill, and other name brands
at a fraction of what other chain stores charge.
Atlantic Bedding and Furniture is close by in Pelham, Alabama,
on Highway 31.
Come see us or check out our website at www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com.
www.AtlanticBeddingAndFurniture.com.
Atlantic Bedding and Furniture, the place to shop for great furniture deals with financing available.
And welcome back to BAMS Radio. It's about 8:17 on a Wednesday evening. I realize Ghostbusters was a little bit random for the show, but I grew up loving that movie, so unfortunately you get to listen to what the DJ likes. Before we get into a little more Capstone sports like we had discussed on the other side of the break, I want to give the number if anyone wants to join us, Carrie and I, at 714-510-3707. We'd love to hear from you. It's, you know, again, you've got us for about an hour, so... And also, I haven't mentioned this yet. I'll mention it now. The chat room is open. TyGP has had my mic muted for the majority of our conversation because he's making me laugh so much. So jump in there and join us as well. Anyway, Carrie, before the break, we had talked about going over some of the spring sports at Alabama. And I unfortunately did not get to catch the super regional between Alabama and Tennessee. I know Alabama unfortunately lost in softball, excuse me. Alabama unfortunately lost, and the women's softball season is done. But could you give us a recap of what happened up in Knoxville this weekend?
Unfortunately, I did catch it on TV. It was not a pretty thing. Well, Alabama went up to Knoxville and got swept 2-0. So the season is over at 45 wins and 15 losses. I was fortunate enough to attend the finals in Tuscaloosa of the Tuscaloosa Regional, which Alabama defeated Western Kentucky handily in that game. They eight-runned them in five innings. That was very nice to see that. Saw three or four home runs that day. Had a good time, had good seats, very enjoyable time. Next weekend in Knoxville, I did not attend in person. I watched via the television, and Alabama got whipped in both games. They led briefly in the second game, 1-0, but were able to hold on. The bats went silent in Knoxville. They never really got anything going offensively. They did leave some people on base. And they were plagued by a problem that hurt them all year, which was not being able to get the big two-out hit with people on base. And as such, the season is over. I stated on this program 2 weeks ago how unhappy I was with the seeding that the NCAA gave Alabama as far as not putting them in line to host a Super Regional. Even though they finished fifth in the RPI, they were seeded 10th by the league, or by the committee. And the committee was looking at the fact that they finished up their season 3-8 on a little bit of a slump. They looked great in the regionals in Tuscaloosa, plowing through the opposition three straight games. Jacksonville State and Western Kentucky, obviously not the greatest competition in the world, because when it came to face another SEC team in the Super Regionals in Knoxville, Alabama was, quite frankly, seemed overwhelmed. They tried to compete, but they just never got anything going. The fielding was not as good as it usually is. The pitching was better than it has been, but not good enough because, frankly, Tennessee was hitting and pitching better. And Tennessee gets to go to Oklahoma City, and I believe they play tomorrow, and I believe they pitted them against Florida. So the folks that seeded that tournament wanted to make sure that one SEC team put the other one in the loser's bracket. There seemed to be a lot of lovey-dovey, we really wish you well type stuff on Twitter with the Alabama players to the Tennessee players. I guess that's all fine and good, but to me, Tennessee is still Tennessee. And even though I may not watch the game, I will be hoping that Florida beats them tomorrow. That being said, it was the end of what I would say is a good but not great softball season. When the final polls come out, Alabama will probably be somewhere around 8, 9, or 10, which, you know, there's hundreds of teams that would love to be there, including Auburn, which fired its coach. But Alabama, to me this year, underachieved almost to the degree of the 2010 football team. And I realize that there were injuries. I realize there were some medical issues that the university can't divulge that affected certain players' performances. I know all that. But 45-15 on a team that probably had the talent to go, you know, 55-5 is a little disappointed to me. But that being said, the season is over, and there are still some other Alabama sports, Thomas, whose seasons are continuing, and it'd be probably a good time as ever to talk about those.
Absolutely. Baseball is starting its super regional run in Tallahassee, and I guess we can just go right into it. I admit that I have, again, preparing for grad school, so these sports have been kind of off my radar. Could you give us a preview of that matchup? I believe it gets going tomorrow, or did they play today?
They play Friday at 11 a.m. Eastern. I'm sorry, 11 a.m. Central. They play Friday, and they will play Troy, which they defeated handily in Tuscaloosa earlier in the year. I believe the final in that game was something like 11-1. Troy has won 40 games, you know, in a lesser conference. Alabama has won 34 in the toughest conference in the free world. It's kind of ironic, Thomas, that we're talking about baseball right now because I've kind of been on their case all year. I didn't feel like they were up to par. Perhaps I should have given them a chance by seeing them play in person. I did not attend a single home baseball game all year as a member of the media or a fan. But when the opportunity arose last week to make the five-minute drive from my apartment over to the Hoover Met and cover the tournament, I saw them play 4 days in a row. And after watching them play in person, listening to interviews, attending press conferences, you know, talking to Mitch Gaspard, my opinion has changed a little bit. I feel a little bit better about the baseball program than I did when I was ripping them on this show a month or two ago. They had a lot of freshmen. They had a couple people make freshman All-SEC. Mikey White, the starting shortstop, made second team All-SEC, regular All-SEC. Second baseman, Kyle Overstreet, he made second team freshman he made first team freshman All-SEC. And really, I think Georgie Salem, the center fielder, must have barely missed out on making freshman All-SEC because it had to have been close, but he didn't quite make it. But they have three excellent freshman players. actually four counting the closer, Ray Castillo, but he only pitched in the Auburn game. They decided to shut him down because he had some soreness in his arm and they wanted to make sure he was ready for regionals. They went to Hoover and made a good case for themselves. They defeated Auburn and Ole Miss, and they lost a couple of heartbreakers to LSU. The second one, boy, I had to change my story because it looked like it was going to be a fairy tale ending. As freshman walk-on pitcher Mike Ozipop was one strike away from being number two in America, LSU, and he could not get that final strike and that final out, and they ended up losing the game that they had led almost the whole game 2-1. They ended up losing 3-2. And it was a heartbreaking loss, but they showed America that they can compete with anybody. And Mitch Gaspard, I am now of the opinion, is getting about all he can get out of his team. That's kind of the opposite about what I said about softball. But I think Mitch Gaspard this year, Thomas, has gotten about all he can get out of that team. And let me tell you something. Alabama, they went 2-2 in Hoover. They lost a 3-0 and a 3-2 game to LSU. They beat a lackadaisical Auburn team, and they beat a good Ole Miss team, okay? They made a big – they processed the Auburn coach, by the way. As soon as the announcements came out that Auburn didn't make the NCAAs, largely due to the loss to Alabama, their coach was fired. So John Pawlowski has processed just like their softball coach, Tina Deese, who was the only softball coach they ever had, got processed after the season. For not making the postseason. Well, they didn't even make the SEC tournament. But the Auburn baseball team was one and done, and that one was Alabama. And so Alabama beat Auburn 3 out of 5. They won, I guess you'd say, the state championship series 3-2, and they processed the Auburn coach. So that said, they got a 2 seed in Tallahassee, which is a fairly short drive for Alabama fans, all things considered. About the only one closer would have been Starkville. They are a 2 seed. They'll be facing Troy, which is an in-state team that did win more games, but Alabama punished in Sewell Thomas a couple weeks ago. Like I said, it was about 11-1. Troy is interestingly coached by Bobby Pierce, who is a former Alabama player and former Alabama assistant coach several coaching regimes ago. But and Bobby's a good guy. Would wish him well were he not playing Alabama. But let me tell you something. I said all that to say this, Thomas. Alabama's playing very well right now. They're starting to gel as a team. They're starting to mesh. You can see a chemistry in the dugout. They're a team right now that nobody really wanted to face. I can assure you that Florida State was not thrilled when they saw that Alabama was sent to their regional. And the ironic thing about that there's just so many ironies in college sports, Thomas. But the irony thing about that is that one of the top players for the Florida State team is a guy that Alabama recruited for 3 years in football to be a potential takeover quarterback for A.J. McCarron and didn't get him, largely because Alabama had just poor baseball facilities. And that's Jameis Winston from Hueytown. He has served as an outfielder and a closer both for Florida State this year, and he's a big reason why they have over 40 victories. So the chances are, if Alabama beats Troy, which they should, and Florida State wins their game, that Alabama could actually be playing against Jameis Winston, which is just really a great storyline. Here's a guy that Nick Saban wanted to be the heir apparent at quarterback, and he's now the heir apparent at quarterback for Jimbo Fisher. And he's also a closer and an outfielder for the baseball team. And he's been clocked as high as 96 on his fastball this year. So a lot of interesting storylines in Tallahassee. But Alabama is playing very well right now. And they've shown they can compete against anybody. They also showed that by going to Vandy, which was number one in the nation, and taking 1 out of 3 in Nashville. They competed every inning of every game with Vandy and LSU, which are the top 2 teams in the country. Now, they only won 1 of those 5 games. But they're playing hard, they're playing well, they're playing smart. They're showing a lot of heart, Thomas, and I can tell you that Florida State was probably not thrilled when they saw Alabama's name come up in their bracket in their regional.
Absolutely. I wanted to have a couple of quick addendums. Troy plays in the same conference as South Alabama, which is obviously in Mobile, and in order to clinch the regular season championship of the league, Troy had to beat South Alabama 2 times out of 3.
And Troy did that to share the title with South Alabama. And there was a huge media stink down here because when the Trojans beat USA, they dogpiled on the USA field. It was a story for like 3 days down in Mobile. So I just, you know, interesting little subplots that you hear. Not a huge deal going in, but I kind of am pulling against Troy because of that, because I had to listen to it for 2 days. But to each his own.
Hey, somebody missed a good chance for a good headline, Thomas. Stink over stanky dog pile?
Yeah. Yeah, that was that was settled.
Stanky Field being where South Alabama plays their home games, Eddie Stanky Field.
Correct, absolutely.
Stink over stanky dog pile.
There's
nothing worse than a stanky dog pile, Thomas.
Oh, jeez. Well,
sounds like the media may have stepped in it,
or they definitely avoided it, depending on your point of view. But yeah, that's going to be an interesting regional. You're absolutely right in that Troy did not play in as tough a conference as the SEC. And the fact that Alabama did take one from Vanderbilt, who had statistically the best season in SEC baseball history, is pretty telling to me. I'm not going to say that Alabama is going to rise up and, you know, win the College World Series, but I think that they'll make some noise, and I agree with you. If I was Florida State, I would be a little nervous. It's baseball is a game where if you get hot at the right time, look at the San Francisco Giants. Their two World Series titles were let's get hot at the right time. They probably weren't the best team the years that they won. I don't want to get into that whole baseball thing, but we can give a shout out to the Braves real quick, because I know you're a huge Braves fan, and Evan Gattis is hitting everything a mile.
It's amazing that they can't find a place to play him every day, particularly as bad as B.J. Upton and some other people are struggling right now. But anyway, yeah, I noticed they were losing 3-0 in Toronto at last look before I came back here. Let me correct myself on one thing I said earlier, Thomas. I need to make a slight correction. The series that was announced by Anthony Grant earlier today in Destin was not Texas Tech. It was Wichita State. The Texas Tech series was already in the works. Basically, they renewed it. So it was Wichita State that he has added to his schedule. So going to be one of the tougher schedules in America. Another interesting thing happened today in University of Alabama sports, Thomas. The men's golf team, which must finish in the top eight through play tomorrow to advance to the championship round of the NCAA tournament in Atlanta, is currently fourth after day two. And like I said, they're tied for fourth. They only have to be in the top eight. But they had something happen today. Now, I'm not a golfer. I don't claim to be an expert in it, okay? I've never even played golf. But they had something happen at the tournament today in Atlanta that I've never seen, or if I have, I can't remember it. They had a snake delay. They had to stop play because a long black snake got on the course at Crabapple.
I have seen an alligator delay. I have never seen a snake delay.
Well, they had one today in Atlanta. And after play resumed, Alabama ended up finishing tied for fourth. They got another full day to go. They only have to be in the top eight to get to the weekend. And if you'll recall, a year ago, Thomas, Alabama – lost by one stroke to Texas in the final round and ended up finishing second in the nation as they were making a bid to win their first ever men's golf championship. The women's team did win the national championship last year with a great finish to their season, and they had high hopes heading into Athens, Georgia this year, but they kind of underachieved and had a bad couple of days and ended up number nine. They probably should have been a top two or three team at the worst, but they had some bad days and they ended up finishing ninth. So they didn't get it done when it counted the most, although they did win the SEC championship to their credit, and they won a regional to their credit. They just couldn't close the deal in the nationals. So ninth place finish in America for the women's golf team. Men's golf tied for fourth after 2 days of play and only need to be in the top eight after tomorrow. With the way some of those guys on the Alabama golf team are playing right now, guys like Corey Whitson and Justin Thomas and Bobby Wyatt which is, I think is a name you know about from Mobile, Thomas. Bobby Wyatt's kind of legendary down there, isn't he?
He owns one of the course records down here. He shot a 59 at a local course, which in to kind of port that to football is basically like dropping 70 on any team in the country. It's just unbelievable. I'm not sure Tiger Woods has shot in the 60s or in the 50s, excuse me, in his life.
Probably not. Probably not.
So absolutely that he
that's,
is
that's
he is
pretty much
legendary.
That's kind of a rundown of what's going on in most of the major sports. I am happy to announce that let's talk a little bit about, before we go to the next break, Thomas, let's talk a little bit about qualification of athletes that are already signed. Summer school is beginning this week in Tuscaloosa. It's getting underway, and the football signees, all but three, are present and accounted for. And you may be able to speak more on one of these than I can, but Robert Foster is not there yet, although he is expected to be cleared. The clearinghouse historically does not work on Memorial Day, despite the fact that many universities start classes that Tuesday after Memorial Day. They still take that day off, the NCAA clearinghouse. So they had not officially cleared Robert Foster, but the only thing that was in question was, were the online courses that Pennsylvania's best wide receiver and one of the best in America took available, were those courses available to all students? The fact of the matter is that they were, and the NCAA has the paperwork to prove that, and by the NCAA I mean the clearinghouse, which is really independent of the NCAA, but the clearinghouse that they contract to clear athletes has that information. Robert Foster is expected to be cleared and could be in Tuscaloosa as early as Friday. So Alabama fans should not worry about Robert Foster. Darius Page from Foley, Alabama, has to retake the ACT, and he needs to make at least an 18 in order to be eligible. So the chances of him being in the first term of summer school are slim and none. Another gentleman from the Mobile area, Spanish Fort defensive back, Jonathan Cook, is not cleared yet. He's having to retake a math class to gain his eligibility. That will require him to do summer school in Spanish Fort area. So he won't be there for the first term. Chances are that even if they're cleared, that Page and or Cook won't be Alabama till August or maybe even July. And July is probably a little optimistic on both of them. I say all that to say that even if those two are cleared to report in the summer, late summer, like, you know, in time for fall camp in August, then I think that they would probably both redshirt. Robert Foster, on the other hand, I expect him to be there in the next 2 to 3 days at the worst. Basketball-wise, all of the signees, including the transfers, are already on campus. Michael Kessens is there. Ricky Tarrant is there. Shannon Hale is there. And Jimmy Taylor is there. So they actually went 4 for 4. So good for Anthony Grant on getting his guys qualified. But he had a lot fewer people to fool with than Nick Saban did. That's kind of a quick update on what's going on academically regarding current signees and enrollees.
Well, that's some pretty solid information. The fact that Darius Page has to make an 18 on the ACT is interesting. I didn't realize the number was that low, but, you know, good luck to him. That, I remember studying forever for that test. I had a really good score, but it wasn't because basically all I did was stuff my head in a book for about 6 weeks. Let's take a quick break. It's about 8:40. We have a caller on hold. So caller, I know you're listening. We will get to you on the other side of this break, and we can talk about whatever it is, and we can go. We have a couple of commits we can talk about in football, so we'll go there next. And I'm frantically, Ty GP in chat, you're getting a shout-out. I'm frantically looking up the Alabama fishing team just for you, buddy. Anyway, we will be right back. Yeah, frantically, trust me. We will be
roll
right
tide
back.
Indeed.
Yeah, we will be frantically looking that up, but we'll be right back on BAMS Radio.
Yeah, I'll look up the Warski team while you're at it.
BAMS tailgate,
yeah.
So darn special.
Sunbelt Inflatable Tents can supply you with custom-designed tents for your tailgate needs. Corporations, businesses,
or just the most hardcore fans are the customers of Sunbelt Inflatable Tents.
Reach them at their website, www.sunbeltinflatabletents.com and ask for Billy, or call 251-247-1169 to order.
Yes, this song is direct to Tai Chi P in chat. That's enough of that. Welcome back to another Wednesday edition of BAMS Radio. It's about 8:45, and thank you very much for joining us. I'm here with Carrie Clark, and if you want to get in on the conversation, the number is 714-510-3707. I am still frantically looking up the men's fishing team for one of our chat members, Ty GP. Looks like there was a championship, but I'm trying to figure out where Alabama placed. Anyway, Carrie, we do have a caller on hold, and let's go ahead and bring that person on and see what he or she has to say. Caller 6107, you're on live with Carrie and I. How you doing this evening? Who we got?
Hey, this is Jocelyn.
Hey, Jocelyn, how are you?
Hey, Jocelyn, how you doing?
I'm great. How about y'all?
What's going on in Phil Campbell?
Nothing much. Pretty quiet over here.
I hear you. What's on your mind tonight, pal?
I was calling in just to say how proud I am. I want to go out and talk about our Bama softball team. And I just want to say how proud I am of how they have played this year. They have played really good. I mean, to make it all the way to the Super Regionals, I mean, that's just awesome. And even though they had lost to Tennessee, you know, I still say that they're number one in my book.
Well, that's cool. That's, I know they appreciate hearing that. I think the future is bright, Jocelyn. I think they're going to have a better team next year than they did this year because some of the younger players will be more experienced, like Andrea Hawkins, Danielle Richard, people like that. And I think Jackie Traina is going to bounce back and have a great senior year. I fully expect them. I was a little let down. They didn't make it to the World Series this year, but I fully expect them to get back to Oklahoma City next year. If not win at all, at least to make it that far. I think they'll be a lot better team than they were this year. And they weren't bad this year, but I think next year they got a shot to win it again.
Yeah.
Well, what else you got
we
for
sure
us?
We
Jocelyn,
sure appreciate
yeah.
you calling. Anything else you want to talk about tonight?
That's all I wanted to say.
Well, give us a roll tide from Phil.
All right, roll tide.
All right, thanks for calling, Josh.
You're welcome.
Good to hear from you.
Thanks so much for Josh.
My buddies that. Yep. Whatever happened to old Marty? Did we run him off?
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned that because as you got off, you got done with your conversation with Jocelyn about the softball team. Guess who popped up on hold and who is now live with us? But our good friend Marty. How you doing this evening, Marty?
Hey, guys. Hey, Gary.
What's up, buddy? How you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, I had to work late last week. I don't think y'all had a show last week, did you?
We can't.
No, I figured you were about tired of us taking off on Wednesday nights. We're going to have to do a bit better job of being on more consistently. I'm going to pledge to you to not take off any more Wednesdays till after football, Marty.
Well, I tell you what, Kerry, I could sit and listen to you talk about Alabama football all night long. I mean, you know, that's how obsessed I am with Alabama football, you know, or Alabama sports in general. But a quick thing, I know, Thomas, you mentioned something about the new recruits, or new commitment, excuse me, that we had. But do you think, Kerry and Thomas, that we found a jewel in the rough with OJ, that big defensive tackle, or nose guard, I would call him?
You know, I didn't even know who he was till he committed. And I believe that Marty's talking about OJ Davis from the Bossier City, Louisiana area.
Yeah, right. OJ Smith.
OJ Smith. There you go. 6'2", 320-pound nose guard, a true nose guard, which when you run a 3-4, you got to have a guy like OJ Davis. I didn't know who he was until he committed, but Marty, my understanding is that he's friends with some of the other big-time recruits in the Shreveport area that we're on, like Cam Robinson, the big offensive lineman, best in America, Brandon Davis, a quarterback who either him or David Cornwell will be the guy we sign. I'm not sure which it will be. May depend on how they do at camp. And Cameron Sims, the other good wide receiver we're recruiting from down in the Shreveport area, or the Monroe area, rather. Some of those guys are from Monroe, the two Cams. But I understand that he's friends with all of them. And the more guys you can sign from the same part of the country, sometimes it helps you get other guys. But, you know, when I looked at his highlights on TV the other night, I saw a clip that had about 10 or 12 plays of O.J. Davis. And he's actually pretty mobile for a guy his size. I guess a recruit from the past days that he reminded me of a little bit, Marty, would be Josh Chapman, who's now in the pros.
I agree. I mean, he looked pretty quick to me. He looked like he had a quick, you know, first step of just watching those highlight films of him. I was kind of tickled a little bit. I think he fits the scheme pretty well.
Well, he does. He does fit the scheme real well because, like I said, in a 3-4 defense like we run, you need to have a true nose guard, whether it's Josh Chapman or Terrence Cody or whoever it is. You know, it'll be Brandon Aubrey this coming year. Big Jesse Williams moved inside from in, gave us a good year at nose guard. But it appears that O.J. Davis is mobile and athletic, just like those guys I just named off are. And you want a guy that's big and strong that can push the middle and stuff the run and basically clog up the lanes between the guards. And it looks, based on his film, that O.J. Davis can not only do that, Marty, but can also move pretty good laterally, which is just a plus when you sign a nose guard.
Well, I think it's a genius move by Coach Saban or ever who actually got down there and looked at his film or watched him live or whatever, because, like you mentioned, it's twofold. I think he is a good athlete, and I think his stock's going to rise, especially since Alabama offered him. You wait and see. His stock will rise. You know, but look, like you mentioned, the friends with all those other guys down there, man, I think that's almost a win-win situation.
It is. It's huge. Relationships and recruiting are everything. They're everything. Between you and the coach that's recruiting you, which I'm guessing in this case was probably Burton Burns, who I'll be actually hearing speak for the first time tomorrow night in Tuscaloosa. Can't wait for that. But whoever it was, I'll find out more about that later. Burton Burns recruits most of Louisiana for Alabama because he used to be a high school coach in Louisiana. But whoever it was that got him did know that, and relationships are everything. And, you know, once I started looking at his film and his offer list and all that, it seems to be a pretty good take for Alabama. I know he Skyped with Nick Saban early in the day. Saban's on top of all the technology stuff, and he was Skyping with the kid when he gave him his offer. And when he gave him the offer on the Skype, O.J. committed on the spot. Now we'll be able to say we got two O.J.'s on the roster because we got the big freshman wide receiver from Prattville already coming in. So, of course, now this kid, O.J. Davis, has got another year of high school, but he'll be a part of the class of 2014. And, you know, and like I said, you know, in this defense, you've got to have a true nose guard, and he is that.
You know, I hate to change gears real quick because I love talking about recruiting. But one thing I want to ask you, Kerry, and especially you, Thomas, about how do you think, you know, you can't take anybody for granted to play football against, especially a Division One football team. How do you think we match up against Virginia Tech in that opening game? I mean, have they got – I haven't really followed Virginia Tech to know what they have up front or – I know they got a veteran quarterback, but how do you think we match up with them?
I can take this one. I think it's telling that if you remember last year, Virginia Tech really stumbled. It was their first not 10-win season in 6 or 7 years, and Frank Beamer was actually on the hot seat, and in response, he shook up his offensive staff. Well, his offensive coordinator he hired is one Scott Leffler, the former Auburn offensive coordinator. And you hear the same stuff you heard coming out of Auburn. Oh, Scott Leffler worked with Tom Brady. Oh, Scott Leffler worked with Chad Henne in Michigan, blah, blah, blah. And it's supposed to be this new thing. And he's helping Logan Thomas, their excellent quarterback, out. And they're going to be such a better team. But it's the same problem you have with most new offensive coordinators. There's new terminology. There's new things to learn. There's all kinds of everything's going to be new. And it is one thing to simulate Alabama against the scout team Alabama. You know, you get your red shirts or whatever, and they try and play against the first team. It's a whole different thing for Alabama to actually play Alabama, excuse me. I think the line opened up in the mid-20s, 22.5, I believe, and it stayed about there. I think that's a fair line. I think that Virginia Tech has always been a very sound fundamental team. Bud Foster, the defensive coordinator, will get a lot out of that defense because, he's done it for 20 years. But it's tough to compete. I don't think Virginia Tech has the horses to compete with Alabama. In terms of pure matchups, I'll be honest, Marty, I haven't broken all the matchups down. I just know from everything I've read about the team that – they're kind of in a rebuilding mode. They're kind of trying to figure themselves out because of a rough season last year. Logan Thomas only completed 55% of his passes and had either as many or more interceptions than touchdowns last year. And he averaged something terrible, like 150 yards passing or something just really low. Some really low number of 150 is decent in college terms, but I wouldn't be too worried about that game. You obviously don't want Alabama to look ahead, but the next game after that, the A&M game, is really where you're going to find who's got the medal, such as it were.
Well, I thought on it is. By the end of the night, Marty, Logan Thomas, which is the quarterback you were talking about, I think he's going to know Adrian Hubbard, Denzel Duvall, and Dixon on a first-name basis. I think that all three of those young men are going to be in the backfield all night, and Xavier Dixon. And I think that by the time the game is over, he's going to be not looking forward to trying to get out of bed Sunday morning.
Yeah, I think that's going to be a huge game. You know, every year starting off with a decent opponent. You know, I know Saban's been criticized this year for the schedule for some sports talk people out there, but you know, I don't think all that's his fault for having the schedule line up like it has. But if we can get by Virginia Tech and Texas A&M, you know, our chances are pretty good. You know, it really looks good after that. What do you think?
Well, I think if they get by A&M,
they can run the table.
I agree. I absolutely agree. If you look at the schedule, there are two, I guess you could say, at this point, truly hard games. LSU-Alabama is going to be a war. LSU is going to remember last year, but LSU is coming to Bryant-Denny, so there's that little home field advantage, which is excellent. Ole Miss has been bounced around a little bit. Hugh Freeze is a great coach. I wonder how they're going to get all that talent to gel. So that's a question mark. And then I'm going to throw this out there, and it's just because the talent is there. I don't know if the execution and the chemistry would be there. Auburn cannot be as bad as they were last year. Are they going to be a 10-win team? I think that's an extraordinary stretch. But they're going to be much improved just because Gus Malzahn is going back to something that they spent time recruiting on for a couple of years, and those are upperclassmen. But I agree. I think that should Alabama get past Texas A&M, which I've got Alabama beating Texas A&M by 21 points. I think the wall – oh, yeah. Johnny Manziel's game is predicated upon doing something spectacular when the play breaks down. First off, who's he going to throw it to? His safety valve, Ryan Swope, in the NFL. They've got that Fuller kid who's 6'5", and will be a matchup nightmare on the outside. And they've got Ricky Seals-Jones, a true freshman, that will probably start because he's just that athletic. But you play A&M like you played Michigan. You set up a wall and you slowly press in. I promise you, Marty, and you will probably be able to see this in the NFL because there will be more NFL games before A&M and Bama come out. The crazy results that you got from Robert Griffin and Russell Wilson and Colin Kaepernick, those will be muted a little bit because now these defensive coaches, they've got a bunch of film, they've got a bunch of time. So oh my gosh, they're tearing off huge chunks of yards with the zone read option, or they're tearing off huge chunks because they have this hyper-athletic quarterback that when the play breaks down can scamper outside the pocket and throw it on a frozen rope 30 yards. They'll take that away, and then it's going to become a question of can Johnny Manziel stand in the pocket when Alabama's not letting him out of the pocket and read the defense, go through his progression, come off his first read, find his check down guy. And the short answer to that is, I don't know. Johnny Manziel's an excellent quarterback, but I'm kind of in a wait-and-see mode as to can he be, as opposed to the spectacular, I just fumbled the ball and I caught the ball and I ran around for 20 seconds and then throw to a wide-open guy and I'm amazing because of it. He can do that. Can he do what Peyton Manning or Drew Brees, is probably the best comparison because they're about the same height. Can he read the defense? Can he go through his progressions? Can he check out of a bad play? Because Alabama is going to be doing everything on defense. Think about who they're going to have calling the defenses. They have C.J. Mosley in the middle. Mosley will probably be in every down because he's so athletic. But C.J. Mosley knows the whole darn defensive playbook, so he can do the whole, Johnny Manziel just audibled into some new formation. We're going to audible right behind him. And I will say it once I say it again. I think Alabama comes into Kyle Field and just says, yeah, you beat us last year. Now we're going to just launch an absolute firestorm into that place. I don't think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be one of those games where, Alabama's going to get some pats on the back for disposing of Virginia Tech, and Alabama is going to go in to Kyle Field second weekend in September, and just absolutely, it'll be just crushed. Johnny Manziel will get his yards in the fourth quarter in garbage time. Before that, I don't buy it. I just don't. I think that the zone read has too many minds on too many teams talking too much to base off an offense very much anymore. I think it's going to go the way of the Wildcat, quite honestly. Unless you have a phenomenal athlete running it, and Manziel is, but he's not a truly polished quarterback yet. Cam Newton, Robert Griffin, once-in-a-generation athletes. Johnny Manziel, he could get there, but he's not there yet.
Well, I hope you're right. I really hope you're right.
Because I've been tearing A&M up for about 6 months, and if Alabama gets beat, I'm going to have to eat the biggest slice of crow pie ever. But I'm banking on the team right now.
Well, I agree. If you give Saban that much time to study, that's got to be in his crawl. That game's got to just be circled because, I was at that game, and I seen that firsthand. Manziel, I seen him. I thought he was sacked several times and got out of that and throwed a 20, 30-yard completion or even a touchdown. I was amazed at that because, our defense really did play hard against him. For some reason or other, we just could not just cage him up and tackle him for whatever reason. But, Saban has had to have that in his crawl for a whole year.
Well,
can I tell you something,
Marty? Go ahead, Kerry. I apologize.
If we, Marty, I'm going to tell you something. Everything you said was true, but they bottled him up pretty good starting the middle of the second quarter when it was 20-0, aside from one deep pass he hit late in the game. But let me tell you something. If we get down in College Station and it's a close game, I know Thomas says it's not going to be, but if it's a close game in the fourth quarter and we get first and goal on the six, can I tell you we're going to run the ball this time?
Yeah. We better run the ball. I'm telling you, you know, that was ridiculous. Of course, if it would have worked out, we would never been said anything about it, but, you know, it didn't. But, yeah, I agree. I just threw my hands up at that point because I thought we was coming back and won that game. I really did.
Well,
I don't know if we'll have somebody this year. I'm not sure if we'll have anybody to play the exact role that Jesse Williams played on offense. It might be. Maybe a freshman like A'Shaun Robinson. He's got some experience doing that in high school, blocking for the likes of T.J. Yeldon or Big Derrick Henry and all these, you know. We got enough running backs, more than you can shake a stick at, that are good. If it's first and goal on the six and it's a close game, I'm telling you, we're running the ball this time against A&M. Just let me just tell you, I'm putting you on notice. We're going to run it four times if we have to.
Derrick Henry.
I don't think it would have took four.
No, I agree. Derrick Henry led by Jalston Fowler four times. Stop it, please. I want to give a quick shout-out. Our good friend Ty GP in chat just said, and I was about to bring this up before he said it in chat, reenacting the touchdown pass for the San Diego first pitch was a huge mistake. I know I saw it, and I know my blood boiled for a little while. And me, as much as I am on the internet, I'm sure someone else has sent it to team, like members of the Alabama football team and whatnot. So it's known that they're kind of being poked fun at. And in my experience, you never poke a sleeping bear with a sharp stick. It never ends well for the person doing the poking. But, hey, do what you want to do, Johnny. You've got to deal with it on the field. One more thing to shout out to. Can you give my shout out to Ty GP? I looked up the fishing tournament, Collegiate Bass Fishing Championship thing, and Alabama took 11th. The team of Keith Kirkley and Logan Johnson had 11th with a total weight of 35.62 pounds. So, Hyde, thank you for reminding me about the fishing team that competed for the Tide. So there's your multiple shout-outs, Marty. I apologize if I stole a little bit of your thunder. Just wanted to get that into him. What else you got for us this evening?
Now, one other thing that's been bothering me a little bit is this Mobile situation. I guess, Thomas, you're closer to that situation than anybody. This Damian Craig from Auburn. I mean, you know my history. I work around a bunch of Aubies, you know, and I'm hearing this, you know, new energy that they have from Damian Craig just taking over Mobile and just going to clean house down there and all this stuff. Can you tell me something that can make me feel better about that? Who we got working that area? And I know what's happened is fell in their hands because Alabama's going some different ways and stuff like that, but what's going on in Mobile?
Well, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago when Trey Williams committed to Auburn and Auburn picked up Justin Thornton and a third guy whose name escapes me. The short of it, Marty, is none of the players that committed to Auburn over Alabama at the time had a committable offer to Alabama. Do I think Trey Williams could earn a committable offer to Alabama? Yes. I think he had the legitimate possibility. But you have to understand, in terms of recruiting, Alabama wants to see a kid perform, either in camp or on a lot of film and correspond with the kid. They're not going to get, you know, completely blown away unless you do something absolutely spectacular. They're going to do their due diligence and say, we'll give you a committable offer at X point. It's a great example. Any quarterback that Alabama is interested in, they will not give a committable offer to until they see that quarterback throw in person. That's from everybody to Thomas Watts to Peyton Manning. They want to see that quarterback throw. It's not that they think he's a bad quarterback. It's that they want to see the player play in a certain set of conditions around the staff. So that's the big thing in Mobile. I wouldn't be too worried about it. And realize also, and we've said this once, we'll say it again. Kerry, you can back me up on this. It's a long time to February. A lot of things can change. So I wouldn't be too worried about it. Damian Craig is a very good recruiter. Having Damian Craig up at Auburn will give the Tigers a better shot at some prospects, you know, some Mobile prospects. But Auburn will get a few, Alabama will get a few, but if Alabama misses on somebody in Mobile, they can call up somebody in California and recruit them. Whereas Auburn, can they? Maybe. Are they going to be successful? Probably not. Kerry, help me out here. Am I missing anything? I might have dropped the ball on one thing that I forgot. Help me out.
You covered it very well. Let me just back you up with some more facts. Two of those four kids from Mobile that are committed to Auburn are from Vigor High School, Marty. Now, we just hired a couple months ago Vigor's head coach, Kerry Stevenson. Don't you think if we had wanted either of those two kids, Deshaun Davis or Justin Thornton, that we could have gotten them when we hired their head coach? Yeah, damn right we could have got them. They didn't have committable offers from Alabama. Neither one of them did. And Trey Williams and Josh Casher are excellent football players, and if they stick with their commitments, they'll be excellent players at Auburn. But neither one of them at the time they committed, nor do they now, have committable Alabama offers. Now, Casher and Williams probably will end up getting Alabama offers this fall sometime, but they wanted to go ahead and commit and get it out of the way, and Alabama had not yet extended either one of them a written offer. That's not to say they won't get one. And that's not to say that, for example, Trey Williams might not flip. You know, he could be this year's T.J. Yeldon or this year's Brett Callaway or Cyrus Quanjo or whoever. Just because they're committed now don't mean they're going to sign in February with you. Doesn't mean it at all. But none of those guys that Auburn's taken out of Mobile, none of the four have a committable Alabama offer at this time. Wouldn't and only be, two of them are probably going to get one.
Wouldn't that be sweet if Williams if he switched another one this year? That would be so sweet. Marlon Humphrey, didn't he get the number one player of the state? Didn't he move ahead of Williams? Is he not the number one player of the state?
Yes.
Yeah, he did.
Absolutely.
Do we still have a good shot at him? I know the history's there, but do we still have a good shot with him?
Very good. Some people even think he's already private, but we have a very good shot.
Well, that's great. Hey, guys, I'm going to get off. I don't want to steal y'all's thunder. Y'all do a great job. It's y'all's show, and I want to sit back and listen to you. But, hey, I appreciate what y'all do, and prayers go out for Bama Bird. I hope he's doing great. I know the situation, and I say a little prayer for him every night, you know. So let him know that I've asked about him, if you don't mind.
We can
we
do
will.
That. Thanks so much.
I'll get off here.
Thank you, Marty.
Appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Have a good evening.
Hey, a couple
Marty.
Other quick things, Thomas. Quick recruiting notes before we get off, because I'm about to have to drop off here. But, you know, Marty
yeah,
asked who
done.
Was covering Mobile. Lance Thompson has taken Mobile back over for Alabama now that Jeremy Pruitt's gone to Tallahassee. So Lance has got great rapport with all the coaches in Mobile. He recruited it for Alabama. He recruited it for Tennessee. They know Lance Thompson. Interesting that Marty asked about Marlon Humphrey because Marlon was on Twitter yesterday complaining that he couldn't get any return messages from Jeremy Pruitt at Florida State, his recruiter for Florida State. Marlon says he's down to Florida State, South Carolina, and Alabama, but Alabama's the leader in the clubhouse. You have to trust me on that. One other interesting recruiting note that I'd be remiss if I didn't bring up. Thomas, we talked about on this show just a few months ago on National Signing Day how close junior college nose guard Jaron Reed of Northwest Mississippi Community College came to signing with Alabama. He ended up signing with Florida, and he ended up not qualifying. So now he's going back to junior college and playing his sophomore year, and he will come out in January with 3 years to play two. So by not qualifying, he has effectively opened up his recruitment. And I mean to tell you, he was within minutes of signing with Alabama before Florida talked him out of it on signing day. And he's going to look at both teams and see how their seasons progress this year, see what the playing time looks like at nose guard. And also he can play the other defensive tackle as well. He can play either one of them. But Jaron Reed is now a free agent again, Thomas. He'll be back at Northwest Mississippi Junior College this fall. And come December or January, he will be enrolling at either Florida or Alabama, but it's no longer a done deal for Florida. They thought he'd be enrolling this month.
I'd seen that. That's a really interesting story. Obviously, Alabama would take a player like that to be a little more physically mature, and he was very interested. And Alabama wanted him before. So definitely a storyline to keep an eye on. From our side, there's no official date yet, like Mr. Clark. Like Kerry said, he's going to be watching both teams, seeing how they do, seeing what things look like, and he'll make his decision from there. But definitely an interesting story, definitely something to kind of keep your ear, keep your, you know, put it on your blip on your radar screen, keep it in the back of your head. Anyway, Kerry, I think it's about time for us to quit. I've got 9:10 on my computer, and I have to do some more studying for graduate school stuff. But before we go, we've hit a couple of our sponsors, and I want to hit our other one that we generally get our plug in, and it's our newest one. It's Big Head Chuck's Barbecue. And I know you have more recently sampled his excellent barbecue, and specifically we wanted to talk about the Triple Threat real quick. Again, you've had it more recently, so I'll kind of pass the buck to you on this one, and then you know you can tell us about it, and then we can just go on and ride on out in the sunset, just as it were. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about that, if you don't mind.
That was actually going to be what I brought up if you asked me if I had anything else, because we cannot you cannot close the show without mentioning Chuck Peak and the good folks at Big Head's Barbecue in the Baldwin County hamlet of Stapleton, Alabama. You can reach them at 251-379-0094. They're on Facebook. They're on Twitter. I cannot think about Big Head's Barbecue without thinking about that Triple Threat. It's a piece of pork with a piece of sausage in the middle, wrapped with a piece of bacon, and smothered in Big Head Barbecue's special sauce. So that's Big Head's Barbecue, 251-379-0094. You can find them on Facebook. You can find them on the web. You can find them on Twitter. They're everywhere. And they are great at catering, whether it is a church, whether it's a school group, whether it's a business function, civic club, anything like that. Give Chuck a call at 251-379-0094. Big Head Barbecue. You will not regret it. It is very good.
Well, I have to say, on that note, I think it's about time for us to go, because I am now very hungry. Kerry, it has been a pleasure doing the show with you. Catch you next week.
All righty, we'll be here.
Awesome. I'll go ahead and close the show. So for Kerry Clark, I am Thomas Watts. Thank you so much for joining us on this Wednesday edition of BAMS Radio. Quick shout out, Ty GP in chat. You've been a riot throughout. Thank you so much. And everyone else, have a great weekend, and we will see y'all next Wednesday for another edition of BAMS Radio.
Roll Tide, everybody.